Hello, and welcome to the Space Coast Pet Podcast, the podcast for pets and the people who love them. Now here's your host, veterinarian Dr. Roger Welton.
Hello, my wonderful pet lovers, and welcome to the Space Coast Pet Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Roger Welton, a.k.a. Dr. Roger, coming to you from the Florida Space Coast. Good morning, everyone. So, no listener email today, unfortunately, much to my disappointment. Please remember to keep those coming. It is one of my favorite parts of doing the broadcast. But today's topic, folks, this one's all about me. Top five veterinary pet peeves. So, you know, I've had a week, I'll tell you. There are things that generally annoy not just me, but kind of stick in the craw of most veterinarians. And, you know, I just want to share them with you. You should know where our minds are at and what we think of some of the things you guys do and say. Please don't take it as an insult. I love you all. We're all human. We all have our human flaws, and you know, it's one of those things where there's just so much information and misinformation and just gobbledygook out there that you know, we have to all digest and sift through. So, you know, what I'm going to discuss here, if you're one of these folks, don't take it personally. It's not necessarily your fault. You've been misled, misguided, perhaps steered in the wrong direction. But I will tell you, if you're one of these, you know, heed my advice here. I've been around the block. I've been practicing 20 years. I've been to the puppet show and seen all the strings. I certainly don't drink any Kool-Aid. I form all of my opinions based on experience, scientific evidence, fact, all that good stuff. Experience, probably more than anything. I've seen so many ebbs and flows. What we once thought was true is not true. What we thought true was not true is true. In 20 years, it's amazing how much things have changed. So my top five pet peeves, they're not going to be in any particular order. They all sort of annoy me. ubiquitously, I guess, at the same level. So, you know, there's not a worst or a best. It's just they are what they are. So this first one I run into a lot in my South location more than anything, because in my South location, there's a lot of retirees, empty nesters down there that actually, a lot of them are northern transplants. They sold their, you know, very valuable homes and estates up in New York, the Midwest, you know, Ohio, Wisconsin, and they've come down to live the good life in Florida. They get, you know, a small modular home right on the water, and they got these little, like, I guess they're, you'd call them trailer parks, but they're so nice and quaint. These little communities. They have their own, you know, swimming pool and community center. Some of them have their own marina if you want to keep a boat. Some of them also have even their own little grocery. There's one that has its own little mini golf course, which is really, really cool. So, you know, really, really nice place to retire. You know, you downsize. And so we have a lot of retirees, a lot of baby boomers I see there. And they're the most guilty of my first pet peeve, cooking for their pet. The moment I hear, well, I don't feed dog food, I cook for my dog. You don't get this with cats as much, because believe it or not, cats actually usually prefer their cat food to anything you're going to cook for them. So this is mostly dogs. But I mean, at least 3-4 times a day, you know, we're going through the medical history. What do you feed? What do you, oh, I cook for my pet. And I just sit there, I'm like, why? Why do you do that? I'm thinking to myself, there is no way you are going to mimic, reproduce the well-rounded nutrition all the nutrients, all the different components that a dog needs to sustain a healthy homeostasis metabolism, age-specific, life stage-specific nutritional strategy than a good quality dog food. You cooking for your pet, you're doing it no favors. In fact, you're creating a little monster. So these are the same people that tell me, I have the hardest time giving Fluffy her heartworm prevention chewable. She just hates it. Well, of course she hates it. You cook her filet mignon every night. She's not going to like her heartworm prevention chewable. God forbid I got a medic, you know, you try to put them on joint chews. So, you know, as they get older, joint health supplements are really helpful to sustain a healthy musculoskeletal system, you know, combat arthritis in a very natural way. Oh no, Fluffy won't eat it because Fluffy doesn't like it. Well, Fluffy doesn't like it, again, because you feed her rotisserie chicken every night. So, you know, it's just ridiculous. Don't do it. Don't start those habits. You create little monsters that, you know, later on in life, hey, guess what? Fluffy's in kidney failure, and we need to put her on a kidney failure diet. Oh, no, that's not possible. She won't eat dog food. So now this wonderful strategy I have that can add months to years to your dog's life, we don't have the opportunity to do that very simple thing to extend your dog's life because they won't eat it. So the other thing too is when these people cook for their pets, they're all fat, every one of them. They're little diabetics in waiting. It's just confounding to me. It's not necessary. It probably costs you more money in the long run than just starting them off and maintaining them on a good quality dog food. So pet peeve number one, cooking for your pet when there's no reason to. Number two also pertains to food. This insistence on grain-free. Oh, I only feed my dog the best dog food. I only feed my cat the best cat food because it's grain-free and it's really expensive. Well, good for you. You've pretty much accomplished nothing. And if your dog is being fed a certain grain-free diet that's on the FDA list of 16 and growing, well, you might have just predisposed them to the deadly cardiac disease, dilated cardiomyopathy. If you don't know about the FDA grain-free boutique-style pet food heart disease risk, go back to one of my episodes. It's archived. I did an updated one not long ago. Grains are not a bad thing. There are rare cases where, yes, we legitimately want to eliminate grains, such as hypoallergenic food trials for certain conditions. But by and large, grains are fine. Grains are our friend, actually. Grains are a source of soluble and insoluble fiber. They're a source of amino acids. Amino acids are very, very important. They provide all kinds of good stuff cheaply. So they can be added to the pet foods to provide all these nutrients at a low cost, and that costs you less in the long run. But you go for grain free, they're replacing it. They're replacing the grains with weird stuff like tapioca and peas, and you know, a lot of really carbaceous stuff that your dog may like, your cat may like, but they're not very often getting good nutrition. And when did grains become the answer to all diseases? Like, how did this happen? You know, the other thing I combat is people come in and their dogs or cats got skin problems and it's been chronic and it's been going on for months, and they're finally to the point where I just got to take Fluffy to the vet. And they come in and they give me their history. I've tried everything. I've tried shampoos. I've tried fish oils. Those are good things. Don't fault you there. And I switched them to a grain-free food. And I'm like, well, hold up. Why grain-free? Well, I wanted to, you know, make sure this wasn't from the food. Okay, well, grain-free, you're not even getting close to hypoallergenic. Hypoallergenic, you have to eliminate, see that main ingredient in that food that you're telling me about? Chicken. That's our number one food allergy. Or others will have beef or turkey or a plethora of other animal source proteins that are the most common sources of food allergy. Dude, going grain-free, that doesn't do anything. I think the most common grain that's implicated in food allergy is wheat gluten. I want to say that's like 10. It's always changing, but it never breaks. It usually does not break the top 10. And that's, you know, that's one grain. But, you know, you look at the food allergy protein list, it's animal source proteins, and the grains are way further down. Bottom line. So, grain-free. Oh, so sick of hearing about it. so sick of it. We actually have jokes, and like when we go to veterinary conferences and there's like new medications for you know, treatment of disease that are being introduced and we're learning about them, you know, so there's always a jokester veterinarian that'll raise his hand in the middle of the symposium, you know, when they ask us any questions. Yes. Is it grain-free? Because if it's not, I will not be able to sell this to any of my clients to treat their pets. So yeah, big pet peeve. So sick of grain-free. Here's a big one. Unneutered or unspayed, we call that intact. So not neutered, that would be your male that's got his boys. Unspayed, that would be your female that was never spayed. She still has all of her reproductive organs when they're adult or senior pets. I don't know why I saw this all week. I actually saw three old, intact, large breed dogs yesterday. Three. Two were from the same household. One was 10 years old, one was 7 years old. They were German Shepherds, and they were never spayed. And, of course, they were ornery, and they were challenging patients because estrogen doesn't agree with a lot of female dogs. As my good friend of mine commonly says, they don't call them bitches for nothing. Estrogen is a hormone that has to prepare females for rearing puppies. It has to prepare them for defending those puppies, feeding those puppies. And they have to have an edge about them. And that's why in the mammalian world, especially as it pertains to dogs, females that are intact for a long time, for most of their lives, have an unsavory personality. They're nervous and skittish at best, often aggressive, as these two German Shepherds from the same household were, challenging to do anything with, and also they carry a 21% incidence of mammary cancer. Mammary cancer is breast cancer. Breast cancer is just like it is in people, only people have two breasts, or mammary glands, as they're technically called. Dogs have 10. So mammary cancer is a very serious problem in dogs. And by keeping your female intact all of her life, she has a 1 in 5 chance of getting mammary cancer. And then here I am managing a perfectly preventable disease had this female been spayed a long time ago, as she should have been. I'm doing a mastectomy on this patient, and hopefully that cancer has not spread elsewhere. And all you had to have done was spay this dog at around 6 months of age, a year latest, and this probably wouldn't have happened. But I see it all the time, and I saw it a ton this week, which I just don't understand what this week was. Like, everything that like sticks in my craw happened this week. So it's just not necessary. On the male side, I had also yesterday an intact, so unneutered, Chihuahua that came in. And the owner complaint was, he's got this skin problem on his tail, and his anus looks weird. And there's like this growth on the side of his anus, right? So I look, and all of those issues are because he's intact and was never neutered. So number one, the base of the tail is very rich in glands, and the area around the anus is called the perianal region, is also very rich in glands. And as these dogs get older, they start producing dihydrotestosterone. And so instead of testosterone, they're making this sort of abnormal analog of it called dihydrotestosterone. And that causes what's called acromegaly. So acromegaly refers to hypertrophy or enlargement of glands. And so all those little glands in the skin around the anus and on the base of the tail, they hypertrophy, they grow. And it causes this sort of like thickening, proud, fleshy looking tissue. And it's ugly. And sometimes it's unsanitary, especially around the anus. And then that little tumor sitting there, it was about the size of like a chickpea sticking out the side of the perianal area. That's called a perianal adenoma. And that's like the ultimate manifestation of acromegaly. So not only have our glands hypertrophied, they've also formed a tumor. Now the tumor is benign, but they're unsightly. They commonly bleed. The dogs lick them, you know, as they defecate, feces get stuck on them. It's just a nasty situation. Most of these dogs that get this issue, this is a 10-year-old Chihuahua, by the way. I'm not sure if I mentioned the age yet. But most of these dogs that get these problems also tend to get big prostates because the prostate is a gland. So lo and behold, I did a rectal examination. We also have a big prostate. So I'm like, you know, your dog's body kind of did you a favor by showing these external problems, because any day now, your dog's either going to get a nasty, debilitating bout of prostatitis, or that enlarged prostate is going to press on the colon so significantly that your dog's going to have difficulty defecating. And as they push and push and push and push, those dogs commonly get what's called a perineal hernia, which has to be repaired surgically. Seen plenty of those. Why? Why didn't you neuter this poor little fellow when he was 6 months old? He wouldn't have any of these problems. He'd have a perfectly beautiful little anal area that looks normal. He wouldn't have a thickened, nasty-looking stud tail. That's what that's called, by the way. That's when that skin thickens and they get the hair loss at the base, at the top of the base of the tail. It's called stud tail. No reason for it. No reason whatsoever. So now, guess what? I have to remove the tumor on the anus and neuter this dog at 10 years old when he's older and it's a little bit more difficult to go through these things. But neutering this dog will fix all those problems. Take away that dihydrotestosterone and life will be good. By the way, dihydrotestosterone is why we as human males experience male pattern baldness, and we also get enlarged prostate, some of us as well, and prostatitis. But we don't traditionally neuter ourselves. We like to reproduce and have families and stuff like that, but it's not necessary for a dog. And even if you have a breeding dog, you know, male or female, fine, breed them. Go for it. But, you know, females should be retired by 4 or 5 years of age. They shouldn't be having any more litters. Get her spayed. Get her spayed and then lower that risk of mammary cancer and let her stop having those heat cycles and let her personality mellow out if she's high strung. Same with the males. Now, males can actually continue to procreate, you know, just like human males until they're quite old, actually. So you got a breeding stud that you want to continue to use. Okay, well, maybe you have an excuse, only if you're breeding ethically and responsibly. But aside from that, neuter the dog. All right, next pet peeve. Breeder knows best. This drives me nuts. So I come in to the room and I'm making recommendations for the new puppy, occasionally the new kitten. Most kittens I see are not from a breeder, thankfully. But puppies, oh yeah, they're usually from a breeder. And of course, I'm going to get pushback lots of times on my recommendations because the breeder said, the breeder said, the breeder said. The breeder said, the breeder said. So one of the biggest pushback I get is, when I want to begin the core vaccine leptospirosis. Oh, no. My breeder said, no, don't let your vet do that. And I said, why? Because it's a very dangerous vaccine and it's just not necessary. Really? Your breeder said that. Well, what is she basing that on? Oh, I don't know. Did she show you any data? Did she show you any articles about it that, you know, are peer-reviewed and good scientific articles? Or no. She just said it's bad. And look, I even have a contract here where she said if I were to get the leptospirosis, she could take my dog back. And like, okay, so clearly your breeder is not an attorney, because as soon as you purchase that dog, it's your dog. She has no right to any health information regarding your dog. She could ask you for it, and you don't have to produce it by law. Confidentiality applies just like in human medicine. She could ask me for it, and I'll say, no, you are not the owner of this pet. She has no legal right to anything regarding that pet ever again the moment she sells that pet to you. And money is exchanged, and you get the health certificate for sale. It's in your possession. The puppy's in your possession. Breeder's got no say in what you do and don't do. But here's what you do by not doing the leptospirosis. You predispose your dog to a disease that is on the rise in my area. It is transmitted by the urine of rodents. So there's rodents everywhere. That includes squirrels, mice, rats. And so wherever there's urban sprawl, there is lots of rats. And, of course, there's squirrels everywhere. And the thing about leptospirosis, it's what's called a spirochete bacteria, so it swims. And it has an uncanny ability to survive in fresh standing water. And we got a ton of that here in Florida. Wherever there's a puddle, a lake, a pond, or just marshy soil, and rodents that are peeing in it, there's potential for leptospirosis. Leptospirosis causes kidney failure and liver failure and carries a 30% mortality rate. With the vaccine, it is 96% preventable, and your breeder doesn't want your dog to have it. And your breeder says it's not important. It's not really a major disease anyway. Your breeder's wrong. And you're kind of annoying me by trying to like have a debate with me about your breeder's opinion, because it means nothing to me. Your breeder doesn't treat leptospirosis. Your breeder's never seen leptospirosis. Your breeder doesn't see how safe the vaccines are. It's safer than rabies. Does your breeder tell you not to do that? Because we have less reactivity with leptospirosis vaccine, at least the one that I choose, than we have with rabies. And it's just other things too, like, you know, they have these boutique style diets that they like. They convince these unsuspecting puppy purchasers of, like, they convince them to that, like, all of the more traditional pet food manufacturers out there that create their foods the right way and research them the right way, they convince them that, no, they're terrible. So, like, I try not to talk about certain brands, but I'll throw out, you know, I like these three diets, and here's the reasons I like these diets. Oh, but, oh, my breeder said that those are terrible. Really? Did she say why? Oh, she just said they're not good.
Oh.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you why they are good and why that one she's recommending for you to feed your puppy is actually the one that's terrible. So, breeder knows best. Ugh. Really sticks in my craw. Ask your breeder if he or she went to college, has a science degree of any kind, is a vet tech, has any experience outside of getting two animals together to procreate. Do they even have a high school diploma?
You know, I hate to be so cynical, but yeah, I run into that on a daily basis, and it just wears on your soul a little bit. And the last pet peeve, I'm telling the owner that the pet is painful and let's say there's a torn CCL ligament or a luxating patella in the knee. We have hip dysplasia that's surgically repairable. You know, anything that causes chronic pain. They say to me, well, he doesn't act like he's in pain. I say, okay, so why is he limping then? Is that like a little shimmy he likes to do? Is he dancing? Because a dog or a cat, they're not going to limp unless something hurts for them to step on that particular limb. So by virtue of the limping, wouldn't that suggest that they're in pain? I mean, yeah, humans will fake limps because we're humans and we fake things to get attention or to get out of things or whatever. But that's not how your dog or cat thinks. If they're limping, it's because it hurts. End of story. Or then I'll show them like an abscess tooth and be like, look at this. See this recession and the pus at the gum line and the bleeding and all this recession. That tooth is toast. It's got to go. It's a source of pain. Well, he doesn't act painful. Right, because they're not drama queens. They don't sit back and say, hey, my tooth hurts. I have a horrific headache. And I tell them, believe me, if you had a tooth that looked like that, you would have been at the dentist a month ago begging to have whatever needed to be done. I speak from experience. I had a trauma to one of my incisors when I was 11, and it caused the tooth to slowly just kind of die. And the dentist said, well, you know, it's encased in there. It's normal. It's, you know, it's not a live tooth, but you know, the root is encased in healthy bone, and you know, we'll just watch that and x-ray it every few years and see where that goes. Well, at the age of, I want to say 41 or 42, my dentist said, look, you're starting to get a halo of bone loss around that root. It's called root resorption. She said, I'm going to recommend you get a root canal ASAP. Here's a referral for it. Go to this endodontist. Naturally, I ignored her advice because I got distracted and I never got around to it. Well, 6 months later, I woke up, and of course it was a Saturday morning, and it felt like somebody was stabbing my eyeball and my brain with a knife. My tooth hurt so badly because the resorption reached a level that was untenable, and it was causing so much pain. I was swallowing ibuprofen every 6 hours to try to get myself through the weekend, and on Monday morning, I was calling this place begging for an appointment. And thankfully, they got me in pretty quickly. I was able to get a root canal that Friday. And but yeah, you know, I had to suffer for several days to get that root canal. So believe you me, your dog has grade 4 dental disease. There's like, by the way, your cat too. Cats get bad teeth too. They have grade 4 dental disease. They have probably several of those things happening, resorbing roots. And believe you me, they're not sitting there saying, ow, my head hurts, my mouth hurts. But believe me when I tell you, they're in pain. And if your pet is limping, it's in pain. So that's my rant for the day. I just had a week. I'm sorry, folks. I just wanted to let everybody know that I do love my job. But it's not all just playing with puppies and kittens all day, skipping around with birds flying around me like Snow White. No, there's frustrations, there's stress, and sometimes these little things that they just add up a little bit, and when they all happen in one day, it especially can affect my day a little bit. This reminds me of one of my old Dr. Karen episodes where, like, we used to joke that, you know, in many ways, our podcasts are therapeutic. They're almost like, you know, she and I would, like, vent a little bit about certain things. But, you know, just trying to add a little bit of humor and vent a little bit of frustration. Please don't take any of this personal. Have a great day, everybody. Keep those listener emails coming. I do. It's really the spice of the show. I love getting them. And as I said before, it's often a source of material. And then you don't have to hear me complain like I did today. Have a great rest of your day.